right? And it's much easier to create something that looks hip and looks like the culture than it is to be like Jesus. Jesus is very countercultural.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Mission Hills LA Conversations Podcast. This is Ryan.
This is the other Ryan.
And we just had a conversation with Matt Yeoman.
Yep.
You want to tell us a little bit about Matt and what they're going to get into in this episode?
Get ready to experience all the feels with Matt.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he just, the way that he delivers the responses to just really tough questions, practical questions, it's just like, it's like a warm blanket.
It's like, well, come sit down.
It really is.
I mean, we'll talk about it.
It was such a, he came into the podcast studios here at Mission Hills LA and he sat on the throne. What do we want to say about the throne?
I don't know. Like, I was thinking like throne cast, but that sounds a little weird.
So to paint a picture, we'll post a picture in the show notes, but there is a golden vintage heated massage chair in my office, complete with cat, where I bought this massage chair at a garage sale here at the church, and it works. It works, and Matt sat down. He's the very first one to podcast live from the golden vintage heated massage chair, and I don't know. I just can't imagine how many people... How many great people will come down and sit in...
It's really exciting to think about, honestly. It's really exciting to think about the number of individuals who will just slightly raise the footrest and just get real comfortable.
I should have gotten a picture.
I picture the likes of some just really wonderful individuals gracing the chair.
Yeah, and Matt was the first in an amazing conversation. He is a spiritual formation expert. I mean, he's just... so in tune with the needs of the LA community. He runs a blog called findinggodinla.com, and I can't recommend it enough. He not only has resources on there about church and community in Los Angeles, but all that he's learned along the way this discovery work.
Yeah, the cool thing about Matt, and you'll hear this in the conversation, is he talks a lot about meeting people face to face and like doing the long work of building relationships. And Matt has done that work. You know, he's done, you know, I don't want to say he's done the time, but he has done the work of figuring out, you know, what are the needs of a lot of people who attend church or regularly attend church in Los Angeles. It's just crazy to think about all the different places he's visited and what he shares on his site. I mean, it gives amazing details and links to people who are actually trying to find God here in LA.
Yeah, and I mean, this is an episode that I would hope that everybody, whether you live in LA or not, obviously, would be able to identify with his experience, and he's very honest in this conversation about his struggles just as a person. And I think that's something that everybody can identify with. And where does the church meet people when life is just really hard? Because we talk about in this conversation how LA can have a tendency to be flashy. It can be all about the good things in life and
very positive centered. Everything's happy here.
Yeah. It's, and people have a really difficult time of, okay, what happens when things don't go as expected in life? And we really get into that in this episode.
Yeah. We really appreciated Matt dedicating some time to come and talk to us. And we hope that you are just as inspired listening to him as we were. Cause man, there were a couple of times where I was like, oh wait, we're supposed to be asking questions. We're not supposed to just be like listening. Like, man, the wisdom and some of the ways that he was framing things about worldview and just sharing about that tough topic was really great. So we hope you enjoy it.
All right, let's get into it. Matt Yeoman.
We are joined today by a good friend of mine, Mr. Matt Yeoman. Matt, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Yeah,
we're
pleasure.
Really looking forward to talking with you. I want to jump in and talk about, Matt, you have this really great website, Finding God in LA, that I want to talk about. You have a lot of different resources on this blog, and I think it's great. But I want to talk first about the latest piece that you wrote about worldview. I've been, you know, diving into this and thinking about it and from my own perspective, and I have just really appreciated how you brought these verses to a new light. But I would love to hear a little bit about what sort of inspired you to write this piece? You'd mentioned that in your post when you promoted this, that you'd been thinking about this for a while. So what was that process like in thinking about that, and how did you come to the conclusion that now is the right time to put this piece out?
Yeah, that is a great question. I mean, the blog generally is a sense of reflecting over culture and life, especially in Los Angeles, and how to follow Jesus in the midst of that. There are certain challenges within this city that are unique to this city. They're not different or unique in terms of the world, but you put a combination of them together and makes it unique for this city. So it's reflecting on my own experience of following Jesus in the culture, and then hopefully giving words, perspective, guidance for other people as they try to follow Jesus in a very complicated city. So in regards to the worldview, and especially as it relates to money, well, basically, I've been thinking about it because I'm trying to survive in Los Angeles with 5-6 part-time jobs, yeah. And I'm not doing it well. So this idea of how do I financially survive? What does this look like? And in the midst of that, honestly, thinking through ideas in my worldview was beginning to go, how do I make money? In order to do that, in order to be the person who has the nice car, who has the money, I actually have to change much of my own life in order to be that kind of person. That means I need to adopt a worldview that makes me take advantage of other people, systems, all of that. And it's like, wait, I'm not that person.
Yeah, absolutely.
And therefore, I'm going to be the guy with 5 part-time jobs in Los Angeles trying to make it, right? Because,
yeah.
You know, I give freely. It's just not me. So that's where it started to just think about it. And then that passage of the rich young ruler came up. And it's like, oh, Jesus is challenging him, but not based on this love of money and he, you know, loved possessions more than Jesus. Is that wrong? No, that is true. But it's a bigger thing than that, because in regards to love for anything takes into perspective all of the aspects of love, thoughts, behaviors, how we respond, what we believe, right? That is a worldview. So it's not as simple as feel this one thing and you will love people better. Just go out and love people, or give up all that you have and love people, and that's going to fix it. Well, no, you're going to have certain beliefs, you're going to have certain feelings, you're going to have certain thoughts that are going to challenge that very perspective. Well, that's part of the process.
Right.
That's discipleship.
That's why he says follow me at the other part, too. It's not just go sell
exactly.
all your stuff and good luck with everything. It's go and follow me, meaning I will help you with filling in the rest of the picture.
Exactly.
You know?
So that's what I was thinking and processing and sitting with, because I don't know how to survive in the city. I don't know how to do it well and follow Jesus in the midst of a very difficult city to live in, a very expensive city where even in my day-to-day, people take advantage of me. Rent is a good one. You look at rent and the cost of rent. It's like, so someone buys a house, then they feel, or an apartment building or whatever it is,
right. Yeah.
They feel justified to raise a rent to a certain level to not only pay the mortgage, but to get money out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
profit.
That is a worldview that is taking advantage of everyone else so that they can profit. Why?
Right.
Because they feel justified in doing it. Well, why do they feel justified in doing it?
Market economy.
Well, we've created the system.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've created, especially in Los Angeles, we've
yeah.
created it. It's a worldview.
Right. Yeah.
And so everyone gets sucked into it, whether they want to or not. And they go, well, it's just the way it is, until they get to the point where then they can do it. And then they do it to everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
everywhere. And the people that are suffering the most are those people that are either trying to make it in the city because they have a dream, or are those people that are on the streets.
Yeah.
The healthcare system, the system
yeah.
itself is broken. You know, I had a friend who, I mean, basically he would ride the bus all night, especially when it was raining, so that he could get out of the rain.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a sore, I think it was on his leg, went into the healthcare system, got horrible healthcare. He died
oh.
because of the system. he has, what is he going to do? I mean, he can only do so much.
Yeah.
And part of the system being broken is it's one, complicated. Two, there's a ton of people.
Yeah.
There's no easy solution of like, okay, let's fix it and here's the easy
yeah.
fix. No, you know, I know people in those situations are like, I wish it wasn't like this.
Yeah.
We are bound by certain dynamics and restrictions and it is complicated.
Yeah.
But all of that is a worldview.
Yeah.
And so, yes, this comes up because we live in Los Angeles, you know,
and
the land of ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think anytime you're confronted with the systemic breakdown, like by seeing the humanity of it, like actually seeing people who are affected by it, like a family that needs help or a friend who's just unable to get healthcare. It, to me, when that happens, it just breaks down a lot of the systematic justifications for maybe how we got there, because it's just about the human at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've failed to see the individual. And I think that's something that as a culture, just on a lot of things that we justify, I think we justify downgrading humanity far too often. And unfortunately, there are not a lot of places in Los Angeles where you can get resources that don't have some sort of strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You absolutely. Know, there's always something that comes along with it.
And the system is complicated. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of dynamics going on. So I have another friend that works for the city of Los Angeles, and one of the government workers came to him and said, we need the church. And this is, I think, specifically in regards to adoption and stepping into that place. And it was interesting why they said, this is the government saying, we need the church. It says the church has social capital, basically has what we can't find or create anywhere else.
Yeah. The ability to generate income.
Well, no. It's capital.
Oh, I see what you're
community
saying.
Community
capital.
Saying.
I see what you're saying.
So capital,
I thought you were talking about like fundraising
capital of
capital.
Community.
Right.
Community itself
yes.
in Los
okay.
Angeles
yeah.
being a challenge, right?
Yeah.
So authentic relationship, connection,
yes.
community, help, hope, outside of a system. And they were like, we need that because we can't manufacture what the church has, which is community,
mm-hmm.
which is something more. We can't create that in a system.
Yeah.
Like the systems are broken. We're doing the best we can. But the very thing we cannot create is the thing the church does have. But the church is missing. And they're asking the church. Literally, the government's going, please, church, please help us.
Right.
Please help us. You have what we need that we cannot create. And you're not here.
Yeah.
Like that is the fascinating aspect in regards to the systems of Los Angeles.
Right.
The need and the need for the church and the community
yeah.
to be there.
Yeah, man.
So you used to work for Ecclesia, yeah? You're,
mm-hmm.
you're a pastor of spiritual formation. You have a pastoral background.
Mm-hmm.
And in Los Angeles, I mean, have you seen, I mean, you've probably seen a ton of these challenges played out in churches. So where do you see the gap between the needs of the community and where the church is at, or different churches in Los Angeles, where they're at and how they're meeting those needs?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's several different aspects that are complicated. I don't know if I can cover all of them, but one of them being...
Let's go deep with one or two.
Yeah.
Being cultural, in the sense that the church doesn't look like its own community. It's churches are commuter churches. Therefore, they're not asking the neighborhood the questions of need. They're not going to doors. They're not going to the schools and saying, what is your need and how can we serve you? No matter what that need is to the government. Here we are. We have resource. How can we help you? They're not asking the questions, because I think a lot of the times the communities, the churches are trying to build something that they feel justified in building. And that's not wrong. It's not bad. There's a lot of churches doing really good things.
Mm-hmm.
But to lay that down and to ask a question of the community then changes every program, every function, every direction, how you preach, what you do. And they don't want to sacrifice that. So that's one thing. Part of it being Los Angeles, they're trying to reach a certain demographic that seems cool.
Yeah.
And has money and it becomes the nice show program with the fog machines and all of that. That's great. Fog machines and
Ryan,
lights. Don't even get me started.
Yeah.
So if that is what you're doing, then you're not going to ask the community because you don't really want the community to walk in your door.
Yes.
You want someone else to walk in your door because the community looks messy. They take time. They take relational energy. Well, you're putting on a show. You're not putting on a relational community.
Yeah.
Right? And so it doesn't work the same. And so that's very complicated. And a lot of people talk the talk in regards to what they want.
Yeah.
But as being a pastor, and especially spiritual formation, the aspect of what we do or how we do things affects people, disciples them, forms them as much as what we do or what we say. And so then you look at Willow Creek and the Reveal study and all of that. It's like, well, they assumed, this is their assumption, we're going to be a seeker-sensitive church. We're going to reach people that don't know Jesus. Fantastic. Like A+. If they get more involved with more church activities, they will grow closer to Jesus. And so them doing the survey of the church, what did they discover? Wrong. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You have to be intentional.
Yeah.
And so how you do it affects people just as much as what you do. So if you put on a show, the show affects people. It attracts certain people. It forms people. So then when life itself gets hard, dirty, difficult, taxing, you have to sacrifice. What are you going to do, especially as a millennial generation?
Yeah.
You're going to leave. You're going to go somewhere else. You're
going
to avoid it. You're going to complain.
Yeah.
You are going to try to seek the good, warm, fuzzy feeling of God and assume that everyone else needs to see how talented you are because that is the solution. Because once they do, then, the heavens come down and you are the chosen one for the next generation of movies or whatever it is. And it's like, that's nice, but that's not life, one, and that's not the kingdom. Again, worldview.
Right.
That's
right.
The challenge
worldview.
Of the worldview.
Right. You're shaping people in that way.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So those are some of the major challenges in regards to reaching a city.
Yeah.
The last one I will cover is just an ethos of Los Angeles that has been here since the birth of the city, which is, I want my own community. I want my own thing. Don't bother me. And so this idea of individual isolation has seeped into, because it was the way the city was structured, formed, right? They didn't want it to be a big, huge city.
Right.
The freeways themselves are an expression of what they wanted.
How little
it
they
to
care
be,
about us.
It's they didn't want it to be a big city.
Yeah.
And then it just kept growing and growing and growing, and now we're stuck with it. Well, that ethos, that DNA of the city has creeped into everything we do, which is, it's all individualistic, and if I don't like it, I'm just going to move my bubble somewhere else for people to validate my own perspective of myself. And so that has filtered into the churches, so they talk about working together, but that takes a lot of sacrifice to do that,
a lot
of sacrifice.
Yeah.
They don't want to do it. They want their thing. They want their program. They want their idea. It's all about their thing, and that's like, okay, guys, like, we have a lot of resources in this city. There's a lot of good things that are happening. And this is not to throw churches under the bus, because there's a lot of really good things happening in our communities and in our churches. There are. They're fantastic. But are there things we can do more of in our city?
Yeah.
Is the government going, hey, guys, here we are. Please help us. Yes. So where is the church? I mean, that's the question.
Yeah.
And some of that answer is not one church saying, okay, we have all the answers, because we are limited as church communities in resource and people and time and being pastors. All of that, we're very limited. So it's going to take us as the larger church to come together and to step in. And it's us that are keeping ourselves from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think those are...
It's a refusal to come to the table.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've seen people come to the table, right? Okay, I have enough time to sacrifice for this discussion. But then when it comes to sacrificing more, it's like, well, I don't have time. No, that's not what my church is doing. That's not the mission or vision of our church.
Right.
Okay, great. I mean, there are some good things. what is it, Refuge? No, the Winter Refuge is one.
Yeah.
Serve LA, right? There are some good things that multiple churches come together to serve the city once a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Right? But the problems of our city don't go away. They're not once a year problems that you can fix.
Yeah.
They're ongoing systemic problems that are an opportunity for the church to step in.
Yeah.
But there are multiple reasons why that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, even people coming to plant churches. You know, I have friends that come to plant churches in L.A. Oh, I want to plant churches in L.A. I'm going to reach the next generation. I'm going to reach and change Hollywood. Fantastic. I'm so proud that God has given you that vision.
Yeah.
What does that look like?
Yeah,
I wish our listeners could see Matt's face.
It's great. It blows my mind because it's like, okay, great. That's like everyone going, I'm going to move to Hawaii because it's so fantastic and I'm going to plant a church. Okay, great. You can do that.
Yes.
Are you planting it for you? Are you trying to reach this whole world and generation and Hollywood for you? It's not that easy. People have gone before you. You're not the first one, okay?
Right. Yeah.
So lay it all down. Work with other... There are other people here who are trying to do it.
Yeah.
How do you come along churches and ministries and support and serve, but people come in going, well, I have the answer from God, and I'm going to change Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, no. And then they move in, and they realize it's a lot more complicated than that, because Hollywood itself is an idea, not a place.
Yeah,
no one cares about the city of Hollywood.
No.
If I said, where's the city of Hollywood? They go, what do you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, no one goes there, right?
No.
It's the idea. It's Hollywood. So when I started pastoring in Hollywood, one of the things that I learned very quickly is Hollywood is an idea, is a place that you come to use, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a place you come to serve or be a part of.
Yeah.
You use it for you, and you use that idea. And when it's done serving its purpose for you, you give up on it. It's very fickle. I mean, you just get rid of it.
Right.
And so, yes, there are all that perception, persona, and some of that has been supported by Hollywood. I mean, unless you're here or unless you're in the city of Los Angeles and you see the people and you see the real faces and you see the needs and you see how complicated it is, you can be somewhere else in the nation and say, well, I have the answer for that. Because perception from the outside of LA is very different than living in here.
Right.
And once you live here, you realize how hard it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going, there's multiple things that are working against that. And I think the first thing that's working against people who come here is their worldview.
Yeah.
I think it's their perspective that I, like you said, I have the answer, disregarding all of the people that are here who have come before who may or may not be trying to do the same thing. And man, if I had a dollar for every time I heard another church say, I don't want to collaborate with you, I could plant my own church and then start telling other churches I don't want to collaborate with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just so weird. And even this is even getting into like cross religions. Like there are some coming to the table with other religions, but overall, there's just not a lot of that. Like, let's see, like, especially even with this, the big three, as we'll call them, the monotheistic religions. Like, I mean, again, going back to what I was saying about humanity, if humanity became the focus, I think it would be a lot easier to approach the table or approach a conversation about actually providing resources. I have a story of a gentleman that I talked to as I was driving for Lyft, and he shared with me his story of going from living on Skid Row to getting housing and living downtown. And so I asked him, I said, what was your story? How did you do it? And what he told me was basically what you were just describing is he found organizations that would provide resources for him that would actually help him get a job. So one thing he needed was a cell phone. So he found an organization that got him a cell phone, which then allowed him to put his number on a job application. The job application then allowed him to get a job, which then allowed him to be eligible for housing, which then allowed him to actually get housing. And it all started with a phone, you know? And what he was sharing with me is that there are a lot of organizations that are down in areas, and I think you see this not just on Skid Row, but in a lot of missional efforts. They go with a certain type of resource thinking that's going to help, and mainly that's food and or gifts of some sort. But what these organizations are failing to realize is that so many people are bringing food. There's just constantly food. The guy was telling me, he was like, there's food all the time. Like, I can eat three square meals a day. I have no problem with that. I want to buy my own food, you know? And so that's where I think I think you didn't ask me, but I think the gap is in, I think that you were saying this too, is in actually finding out what are the resources that you need. Each community is different. What are the resources within this community and how can we help provide those resources?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jobs, education, what is it?
If we backtrack, I'm really fascinated by your work as a Hollywood pastor.
Yeah.
And going back to what you were saying about just an ethos of isolation and one that is very not self-reflective in the good sense, but one that really is kind of self-serving, even if people, because I honestly don't think people are, they moved to Hollywood or they moved to Los Angeles just because they're awful, selfish, vain people. But you do have this kind of undercurrent of churches that serve those types of people in LA. And you see a lot of churches like that. And they're really cool, really hip. Ryan knows what I'm talking about. Ryan is so cool. Ryan was wearing a shirt yesterday. That was like this army shirt, had his name on it.
I got it at a thrift shop.
It was unbelievable. It was so Hollywood. If people listening could see it, it was great. So Ryan is really hip, and there are a lot of people in the LA area that are very hip. And churches, oftentimes in Los Angeles, as someone who moved here from Texas, I was really weirded out by all of these like amazingly hip, fog-machined, showy churches. Wasn't really my scene, but I know a lot of people really love that. And you had a quote on your blog here. I'm just going to read it. You say, it is much easier to write, or I would say, you know, whatever, when life is good. It is easier to give advice when life is working out. It is more difficult when there are no answers. And that quote really reminds me of like this discussion, because I think those churches really operate in the first half of that statement.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty often.
Mm-hmm.
What is your experience? What is your impression of the sort of microcosm that is Los Angeles, large Hollywood-esque churches?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's quite a few of them.
Yeah.
I think I've been to all of them. And again,
really?
Okay. Yes,
yeah.
I've been to a majority of the churches in LA.
Yeah.
Visiting. They're not bad. They are what they are, and
right.
They're reaching a certain demographic. Their intention most of the time is not necessarily though to reach a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's to reach the idea of Hollywood.
Yeah. Okay.
And in
yeah.
order to reach the idea of Hollywood, you must attract those people who either are part of Hollywood or desire to be part
mm-hmm.
of Hollywood, as if one person's going to change the whole system.
Doesn't work
that way, but that's the perception.
Yeah.
And it brings in money, and it looks cool, and
yeah.
it's the new hip thing, right? And it's
yeah.
much easier to create something that looks hip and looks like the culture than it is to be like Jesus. Jesus
mm-hmm.
is very countercultural, right?
Yeah.
And so much easier to do a fog machine, lights, make a show. People
yeah.
are going to show up. You have them
yeah.
wait in line before they get into your
yeah.
Service multiple times.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I've heard of this. I've
yes.
never experienced it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, when I walk out, it's like, okay, wait, you talked about Jesus.
Yeah.
But where was he?
Oof. Yeah.
Right? It's how we do it forms people as much as what we're saying. Like, you said a lot of stuff about love and sacrifice and Jesus.
Yeah.
But where was he? I don't know.
Yeah. I've never thought about that idea of reaching, attempting to reach an idea as opposed to reaching people.
They're reaching people that are part of the idea.
Yeah.
But those people are, it's just a commuter city. They live all over the place. So how do you create community?
Hmm.
So if the church, okay, say, you know, we have certain aspects that Jesus has created in the church that are unique to the church. And part of that is the Holy Spirit, the presence of God, love, community, grace, mercy, forgiveness, all of that. Okay. Well, it takes community to live all of that out. right?
Yeah.
That's so
you can't do those things by yourself. Like,
well, and you can't do them
yeah.
from a distance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we are missing out on a very aspect that is vital to what makes the church the church, because the church is the people of God and not a building, that we don't have because we're trying to reach this mass idea.
Right.
Or, you know, it's sad.
Yeah, well, that's interesting on a practical level, because I think it really plays into a part of the challenge of not being able to really reach the needs of the community, because you do have these sometimes really large churches that have people from all over the city, which we know can
mm-hmm.
be from an hour in any direction, really,
mm-hmm.
coming to meet at this location for a talk and music, and then they go about their week. And then you have a lot of really old, small churches. Mission Hills is a really old, small church up in the valley. And there are a lot of churches that are like ours or even more under-resourced, that they're almost so old that they can't reach the needs of the community, I feel like.
Mm.
And they just look, you drive past them, even around here, the churches around here, they just look empty. There's just no one's ever there during the week. And I just wonder, you know, how do we partner with people to reach the needs of the community if there are so many churches that are just quiet, you know?
Yeah, well, I think there's an opportunity, just my expert opinion here. I think, and Matt should really be answering this question, then maybe I'll say something that will spur your thoughts, but I think the sort of shying away from sharing resources, or at least collaborating on promoting the offerings of each community, is kind of damaging any sort of progress or preventing any sort of progress. I mean, we've tried to, with just the events we've done here at Mission Hills, reach out to churches and say, hey, will you just promote this?
Mm-hmm.
You don't even need to come, but will you just let your community know that we're doing this?
Yeah.
And they're like, we'd love to,
yeah.
but, you know, we don't have time to do this, or we don't have time to do that. It's like,
yeah.
you don't have time to cut and paste an event on climate change on your social media platform.
Right.
Like, okay, but really? I mean,
mm-hmm.
we're not trying to poach congregations or communities here.
Ah, yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not, I have this kind of crude analogy about church growth in LA. It's like swapping spit. You know what I mean? Like, people just go, it's like, oh, and this idea of church
yeah.
shopping, like, that's a very accepted term in this
mm-hmm.
city. Well, I'm church shopping.
Mm-hmm.
But what's on your list then, I guess, is the question. Like,
yeah.
oh, well, do you have a broker for that? I mean, I don't, it's very confusing. And so it goes back to what I want to get back to is what you were talking about creating community. And actually providing entry points for people to find relationships and people to do life with in this very difficult city. Because going back to worldview, our worldviews, when we don't, I think, become very difficult to change. You
mm-hmm.
know, when we don't interact with community, when we're not around other people, we sort of just spiral in whatever sort of worldview we're creating at that time. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that leads to even further isolation.
It does. And something you mentioned about just your experience, Mission Hills with other churches. Well, part of that is worldview. So churches now, in order to succeed, have a certain perspective of marketing, branding,
mm-hmm.
communication, because those are what make churches grow, and you sell a certain brand. So in order to give space time for anything that's not your brand, you can't do. So when they say they don't have time, I was a pastor. I know there's only so much communication. Our world now, so one of the reasons this is becoming a lot more difficult, because our worldviews are becoming more complicated. It's not as easy to go, this is very black, white, follow Jesus. People are like, well, what does it look like in this industry? Or what does it look like in this job? And it's just becoming a lot more complicated. And so to say, oh, I'm just going to add one more thing into the mix of all the complicated communication going on. Churches have a very narrow bandwidth, even with their own people, to get them to follow Jesus.
Yeah.
And so it's our culture itself has created a dynamic in which we have adopted in order to grow our churches, that makes the whole thing complicated. So, yeah. You know, I was in that space where people said, you know, promote this. And I'm like, we only have so much space, because if I promote one thing, that's four other things that people in church are not going to pay attention to. Mm. It is just difficult. And it's not that I didn't want to or that it wasn't important.
Right.
It was just like something's got to give.
And
so with that worldview, it challenges then to have that kingdom worldview. Are we looking at our churches, our communities, our ministries in regards to the long game ministry, the mm-hmm. kingdom of God? So when I was a pastor, one of the things I would focus on, I said, okay, especially to our leaders in our church, I said, okay, we have lay leaders, we have staff members. I do not suppose that they are going to be part of this church for the rest of their lives. God has called them to certain things. God has gifted them with certain things. Now, we have them for a season. So how do I invite them into what God has called them to in the long game, in the kingdom of God? How do I steward the gifts that God has put in them? How do I challenge them? How do I grow them? And then send them out. Well, that's a kingdom perspective, because that doesn't necessarily grow my church, my ministry.
Right.
Now, it grows God's church, God's ministry, God's kingdom through them.
Right.
But that's a very perspective theologically. That challenges everything we do and why we do it. And so that's all of it. And part of that is community, right?
Yeah.
It's, yes, I'm going to create community, but am I going to create community for me? You know, it feels good. In the kingdom of God, we create community and then we lose people. We send them out to create community
mm-hmm.
and it hurts and we sacrifice. And that's just the nature of what it is.
Yeah.
And if we don't want to do that, then don't do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't be a part of the kingdom.
I know.
Right? Don't build your own church. Build the kingdom. Mm-hmm. So, again, going back to the passage that you read with churches and focusing on the aspect where it's always about the good part. It's not about the bad part. Well, yeah, we've modeled that within our churches. It's always about the feel good with God. It's not about the pain. And especially millennials. I was on a panel one time in Hollywood, and some of the people from around the nation asked, how do you reach millennials? And I said, well, here's the deal. When it stops working for the narcissist and the millennial, that's the point where you can have a real conversation. That's the point. When it stops working, when life becomes hard, when their own perspective of what it should be, what life should be, how people should respond to me is no longer working, well, then that's when you can have the real conversation. That's when discipleship really starts. It doesn't start when they're trying to create their own thing and using the church and using culture. So if we've created systems where that's the case, and then when it becomes hard, they have nowhere to go but to leave church, to find solutions on their own, to just go to another church, well, then we're doing a disservice.
Yeah.
And we are leaving out all of those people that are secretly suffering. I mean, that's the other dynamic in church. It's always about the happy, yeah, we love Jesus, we're going to be happy.
Yeah.
And this happens on the big holidays. So we get Father's Day, Mother's Day, yeah, we're going to bless the mothers. What about the people in the congregation who can't or have had miscarriages, who can't be a mother, who is 60 and never gotten married?
Yeah.
How do we invite them into following Jesus in the kingdom? How do we be a community for them? I mean, that is a very practical example of what churches are doing on a large scale in regards to the people in their communities. Well, we don't want suffering. We don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about when it's not working. We want you to feel good and to go get them.
Yeah, too much emphasis on setting this infrastructure has been on positivity and all the good feels,
mm-hmm.
because good feels make people in generally better moods, which generally will, I'm just going to say it, allow them to open their wallets a little bit more. You know
it's
what I
true.
Mean? And so there's no infrastructure for setting up. I mean, there are a few things, and I know some places have, you know, celebrate recovery groups, and there are certain things like that. But again, I wonder with those programs, are you actually providing resources, or are you just sort of furthering shaming people while sort of trying to say, no, we're celebrating you, but in a way we're kind of shaming you of your past behavior so you'll never do it again,
mm-hmm.
by creating some sort of false sense of accountability,
mm-hmm.
you know, which then creates deep scars,
mm-hmm.
you know, so.
And it avoids the deeper conversation.
Yeah.
So sometimes people aren't trying to be superficial.
Yeah.
They're not trying to. If you ask any pastor in the city, even of those big, flashy, churches, mm-hmm. and you say, are you trying to reach people for Jesus and invite people to follow Jesus? They all go, yeah. No one's going to disagree with the answer.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
No one's going to say, no, we want to have deep, real conversations. We want to empower people. We want to see a city change. They're all going to say it.
Right.
Right? But we have left in this regard of superficiality, and so we miss some of those deeper conversations, because those deeper conversations take sacrifice of our time, our energy,
mm-hmm.
they're hard, and many times, again, many times they don't have answers. They don't have
mm-hmm.
fixes. I can't give you the scripture verse or give you that nugget of wisdom that's going to change your life.
Yeah.
I just have to sit with you in the pain, because there is no answer. And as a pastor and as a ministry leader, I don't have time to sit with people in their pain. I only have so much time, and that's
mm-hmm.
not something I'm going to sacrifice for. Why? Because I have created a system based on what I see as necessary as a worldview. And that's the thing that gets on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, well, someone in our church is just going to have to do that, right? That's why we have lay leaders.
Mm-hmm.
They can
yeah.
sit with that person in
right.
their pain. That's why we have community groups and life groups
right.
and Bible studies.
Someone
they
with
can,
no theology training and or pastoral care.
Well, and they
sure.
can sit with them in their pain.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. Who's training the leaders of how to be with people in their pain if
mm-hmm.
you yourself are modeling something very different? That's the problem.
Yeah.
Our churches are modeling one thing, and then we're expecting people to just magically be more like Jesus than we are. It's like, no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So let's look at the whole thing and remodel the whole thing and go, is it Jesus?
Mm.
Does it look like it? And there are communities that are doing a great job. I mean, this is a general generalization. There are some communities that are doing great stuff, serving
yeah.
the poor and being involved and asking the needs of the community.
Yeah.
Some of those churches we've never heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Because they're doing the work. Because
they're doing
right.
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're too busy doing
yeah.
it, but they don't have time to talk about it. Like,
yeah,
yeah,
and they're
so
not
the time.
Big flashy thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We just don't know, but they're doing them. They're
yeah.
around. They're there.
For sure. Yeah, it's a lot easier to want to be a part of something that looks like culture, that feels like culture, than it is to just go and do something that maybe nobody's going to notice, or it like won't Instagram very well, or
mm-hmm. yep.
it might take more of your own emotional energy to be a part of, and you might feel spent at the end of the day. You
mm-hmm.
might not feel fulfilled, or like you were saying earlier, Matt, you might not come out just feeling like on top of the world like you expect maybe to feel as an LA person.
And it looks like success. If you have a product, if you have something to show for it,
yeah.
it looks like success. It looks like numbers. It looks like growth. It looks like hitting your mission and your vision.
Yeah.
When you're sitting with someone in the midst of whatever they're going through,
yeah.
it's like holding sand in the wind. I mean, it's a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's more fruit in that, because Jesus says, if the seed dies, then it bears fruit. We're letting it die. And there's kingdom value in that. And there's fruit that we don't even see, except everyone else doesn't see it. And they go, well, you've let it die. It's like, yeah, I did. This is what I'm following Jesus. Follow me as I follow Jesus. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm laying it all down. I'm laying it all down. Here it is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm dying. Right? I'm giving up my time. I'm giving up my energy. I'm giving up my perspective, my dream for my life, my expectations, right? I mean, how many people in wherever they are in life, and I talk to a lot of people this way, are you where you thought you would be at this stage in life? Very rarely do I get the answer, yeah, I'm exactly where I thought I would be. Like, I have nailed it. I have hit all of my goals. I am just right here. It's like, no, everyone's going, this is not where I thought I would be. I thought I would be here. Like, life didn't turn out the way I thought it would. Because we've preached the idea to next generations is do whatever, you know, dream and it'll be done for you, right? And they see how great you are and you're so special. I mean, that's the problem with the millennial generation. Except the value in life, the finding the key, the joy, the hope, is the kingdom, is Jesus. So that's why he says, if you lose your life, you'll find it. If you try to save your life, you're going to lose it, right? So are we modeling that in our communities and our churches? Are we leading people how to model that? Are they opening their homes? Are they sacrificing? And that's not to say, like, again, what we talked about with the rich young ruler, it's not to say you have to sell everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you have to be open to Jesus' challenge to come follow him. So if he says, do it, we have a choice. We do it or we get sad and we walk away. But are we willing to sacrifice and keep sacrificing? And then 20 years later go, what do I really have to show for it? I don't have the house. I don't have all the money. I don't have everything that I wanted. Except we can look back and go, wait, I have the fruit of the kingdom. People's lives have been changed. And I'm talking, this is from experience. I'm not in the place where I thought I would be in life. And I look back and go, what did I do? Right? I have a couple of master's degrees. I served in a church that let me go after 3 years. I've, you know, working part-time jobs trying to survive and say, what am I doing? I got nothing to show for it. Except the people that I have just given away the only thing I have to give away. And they're like, you mean so much to us. You are our pastor. And I'm like, I haven't done anything. I have nothing to show because it was Jesus through me. That was the kingdom. That God is changing their lives. And that's the value. That's the treasure in their own lives. But I can't see that. I walk away going, I've wasted my life. Right? Because I can't necessarily see that fruit, but they can. And no one else can necessarily see that fruit of the kingdom of God in their lives. Of those people that are influenced and changed and affected. But they do.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's going to last. But that's not a very popular message.
I was just going to say just really quickly, you know, you have actually been someone that has been very instrumental in my life. So I would hope that the work that I'm going to eventually do, I hope you can know that you actually had a really big portion of getting me to a really big part of getting me to where I am today, because, you know, most people don't know Matt. How tall are you? Like 6'5"? 6'6"?
6'4".
6'4", okay, yeah. So I've weeped on Matt's large, broad shoulders on more than one occasion for no real particular reason, not even really knowing why. So in those times, though, of just not being able to process, when you talk about, you know, giving away stuff like sand, you know, I've been part of the sand in your hands, you know, and you've just been standing there holding this space for me, giving... watching stuff go. So I just wanted to just, I guess, thank you, because me being able to move forward with a lot of my ministry comes from a lot of conversations that you and I've had, and comes from a lot of your investment in me. So I just wanted to say that.
Well,
just real quick. We can hug later.
No, and I appreciate that. And it means more to me than anything else of God in your life. Of what he's doing in you and through you. It does. Like, I hold on to that. And the challenge yet is I go home and I go, how am I eating?
Yeah.
How am I paying bills?
Yeah.
Right? So that is the real challenge. So I go, yeah. Okay, God, where are you? I need a little help here.
Yeah.
And that is the challenge in our ministries. Because, yeah, that's it. But it's, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, did you have anything to do?
No, I think that's like a really great place to...
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I want to make sure that people can follow you and keep up with your stuff. So how can we follow you? How can we support the work that you're doing? What can we do to make sure?
Yeah,
that
how
you're...
can people donate? Do you have
a
Patreon?
Yeah, do you have a Patreon?
I do not. But
do
I can set one up.
Do you have a PO box we can send like gift cards to or something?
Yeah.
Like,
set one up.
Anybody want to take Matt to dinner? I mean,
yeah.
He's very handsome.
You are in the Los Angeles area.
Yeah, he's very handsome and he's a great listener.
Yeah.
So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you want to have someone make you feel good about yourself, buy Matt dinner. It's going to be great.
But
cheaper than therapy.
But seriously, I mean, findinggodinla.com, right?
Yep.
Findinggodinla.com is where you can find his blog. And there's a great backlog of blog posts there. And it's just unbelievable. Is there anywhere else online that people can send you a message or get in touch? Or?
That's probably the best way.
All right.
That there's a comment section. You can comment and ask a question. And that'll go to my email.
Okay.
So that's probably the best way.
All right.
I do have an Instagram, but that's...
Yeah.
And it is on that page, so you can find it that way. But it's just following my random pictures of
Let's flood
LA.
Your Facebook with friend requests so you can be like a person of interest or something.
There
and
we
then
go.
You can send mine. So everybody find Matt on Facebook.
Yeah.
Let's make him a person of interest so he can start monetizing this stuff.
There we go.
Because that's what we need to have happen.
Well,
cool.
Thanks so much for being on the podcast and for joining us.
Yeah,
it's
thanks
great.
For your time.
It's
pleasure.
Great.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Mission Hills LA Conversations podcast. Hey, if you like this podcast, go find us on social media at Mission Hills LA and say hey, or visit us online at missionhillsla.com or leave us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as we're getting this podcast off the ground, we really appreciate all the feedback. Also, if you're in the Los Angeles area, we have a lot of upcoming events. You can find that on Facebook or on our website, and we'd love to see you at an upcoming event. And we'll see you on the next episode of Mission Hills LA Conversations.